irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch, everybody, as you always are, Friday here, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and wherever else you're listening to, on LA Talk Radio, the country's and world's most listened to, irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk radio station. And we have a fascinating subject, of course, today. I put it out there in social media. Those of you guys who follow me here on the couch, know that we're talking about something we have to deal with every day. We're listening to it on the news, of course. We see it flashed in front of our face every single day. There's anger everywhere, whether it's religious, fanatic anger, terrorists, the individual who cuts us off on the freeway because they're having a bad day, or biologically inherited anger, which we're going to talk about that as well. We all have it, and you probably have much of it if you're in a metropolitan city and you're trying to get around and you have a lot of stressors in your life. So are you angry a lot, guys? Have people told you that if you don't manage your anger that they're not going to want to be around you anymore? Have you lost relationships because of your anger? And of course, we all know somebody, right, who's too angry or ready to accuse others. Did you grow up with parents who were angry, one or the other, or several relatives you had to be around who were explosive, and it was just like, whoa, you had to sort of go in your shell and had to manage your own sanity due to other people's anger? Well, it's all around us, like I said. It's hard to deal with, and we all have our own triggers, as we call them. I mean, we live in an age of rage. I mean, it's just, we've got road rage, net rage, work rage, relationship rage. And I'm just reading here, according to a Harvard Medical School study back in 2012, close to two-thirds of American adolescents have experienced an explosive anger attack, establishing that the problem is far more common than previously thought. About 22 million Americans have incidents of impulsive fury. And, of course, the big subject, easy access to guns. And this is according to recent combined research from Harvard, Columbia, Duke universities. But there is good news to this. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. And today you're going to find out why anger is normal. Of course, it is normal. And also why we can get ourselves out of it. And why it can be mentally and physically destructive to us and others. It really is. And of course, how we can change ourselves. And my special guest today is an amazing author and a teacher and psychologist, Dr. Bernard Golden. He's the founder of Anger Management Education. He's been a practicing psychologist for almost 40 years and the author of several popular books, a few of which are entitled Unlock Your Creative Genius. That's a great book, by the way, guys. Really need to get in touch with that one. Also, Healthy Anger, How to Help Children and Teens Manage Their Anger. And, of course, his latest book, which we're talking about today, it's called Overcoming Destructive Anger, Strategies That Work. And we have Dr. Bernard Golden on the air with us. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're great. It's my pleasure. What a book. What a comprehensive and easy to flow and read-through kind of book, which I really like, personally.
So, thank you.
Well, thank you for being an expert and for helping us all out on this particular subject, because, I mean, it is like an epidemic today, isn't it, Dr. Bernard?
It's quite widespread.
Mm-hmm.
We see anger in terms of the electorate. We see anger, like you say, in terms of adolescence. A lot of anger, and I'd say anger is about inner pain. We feel threatened, and it also comes from a feeling of other feelings like shame or helplessness or powerlessness or anxiety.
Sure, it sure does. And, of course, it's old brain stuff. I mean, it's survival. It helps us survive the anger. We have to, you know, show our enemies or the wolves that are chasing us that we're going to fight back and that we're not going to take it anymore.
Very much the old brain is is our thermostat full of feeling threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us have a lowered setting that we become very vulnerable to, feel threatened and very reactive.
Yeah.
And the challenge is to engage the more modern brain,
the
thinking, rational brain, to override and oversee the emotional brain in many ways. Exactly.
Got it. So true. You know, I'm always interested in my expert guests and authors, why they get into a particular subject. Can you sort of share with us why you were really interested in this idea of anger and helping people with it?
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Professionally, I put together a 45-minute class when I worked in psychiatric hospitals on anger, anxiety, one on depression. And little by little, that's evolved into these books. On the other hand, personally, I grew up with my own anger issues, and in part that was reacting to and observing my parents. They were seemingly bickering very often, angry at each other, and I sensed that they were blaming each other for what didn't go well in their lives. And I became, angry at their anger.
Yes.
I wanted to help them, but I realized, you know, I can't do that.
Good for you.
I found it very frustrating, but I saw it interfering with them leading a more fulfilling life. And so over the years, that's what I've wanted to do, is to help people lead a more fulfilling life rather than be distracted by the anger.
Right. And that's really a key word, is rather than be distracted by it and try to work on it. And also, guys, we're going to be talking about some of the ways that Dr. Bernard Golden suggests in the book. They're really helpful. I mean, he just jumps right into it as to how you can manage your anger, to kind of look at it, why we have it, and also, you know, help others around you, I guess, manage their anger. By the way, let me say that if you would like to email me, you can do so. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Golden, it's straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Of course, you can call live here on the air. We have a lot of shy people out there, Dr. Golden, so they don't like to get their voices on the air. But if you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call here in Los Angeles, 323-203-0815. We'd love to hear from you and maybe share some of your experiences and ask Dr. Golden some of the, you know, ways that you might be able to chill out your anger or help others who you may know. And again, it is one of the most common issues that I hear, you know, in my practice, and I'm sure you do too, Dr. Golden. Just, boy, I can't be around this person anymore, or I grew up with parents who were always angry, and I don't want to live like that.
So, right. The challenge is to use anger as a signal to turn our attention inside, to look at what feelings we're having, what thoughts that might trigger our anger. And when we're angry at other people or angry at situations, we're distracting ourselves from these other negative feelings, from recognizing discomfort and the real meaning of anger within us.
Right. So, you know, we all have it. We all have triggers. We all have, you know, issues going on. So does anger serve a particular purpose in our lives? I mean,
anger is a natural emotion like others, and if we take time to listen to it, it tells us more about ourselves than it does about the other person or situation.
Yeah.
But taking time, and I have a log that I offer in my book, after an event makes someone angry, I have them review that event, and they can identify triggers, they can identify expectations they may have had, they may identify their own personal hot buttons,
right.
And by doing that, they can back up and recognize you know, I guess I have a key desire for closeness,
for intimacy,
for a sense of trust, that when I'm angry, those key desires are feeling threatened.
Right. So also, when you talk about triggers and hot buttons, we have to sort of identify what those are. And you know, sometimes we need therapists to help us kind of say, well, what general feelings make you uncomfortable? And I hear a lot of those triggers are control issues. I'm out of control in my life. I have no control over anyone else. I have a horrible job, a horrible boss. Finances are tough. I have no control. That seems to be a big one.
That is a major challenge, mm-hmm. and feeling powerless mm-hmm. that accompanies that. Mm-hmm. And the challenge there is to look at those areas that I can control that can give us some sense of agency or empowerment, that we do have choices. There are things we can't control, and the way I see it is I tell people we naturally react to try to control things around us.
Mm-hmm.
A major factor for emotional resilience, though, is when I recognize I can no longer control things, mm-hmm. to let go, to mourn and grieve the expectation that I should be able to control something when I may not be able to.
Yeah, just try to.
And that's a challenge.
Yes, it is. And you explain in your book, by the way, Overcoming Destructive Anger, how we can sort of, as I call it, unhook from those expectations and things like that to make us feel a little better. You know, talking about triggers and hot buttons, also a lot of people, you know, let's go psychological, shall we? We grow up and we're given certain messages. We're not good enough. Many of those messages come from our parents who are not resolved in their own self-worth. So they project it onto us. So we grow up feeling like we're not good enough. We're always judged. We're controlled. We can't be perfect in the world. We'll never succeed. All these messages, you know, growing up. And that really makes us angry, especially when we get older and we've bought into a lot of these old messages. Right, Dr. Golden?
Definitely. Yeah. We buy into the word they use is internalize these expectations for ourselves, often without being aware. Mm. And so I ask clients, when you have your inner dialogue, is it an inner dialogue of a tough love parental voice, or is it an inner dialogue of a more compassionate, nurturing voice? Because perfectionism is, for example, intense perfectionism, is very much a tough love.
Yeah.
And doesn't consider that we make mistakes as humans, that we have flaws, we have weaknesses. And it does, like you say, come about from how people react to us in our earlier years and expectations that we develop.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to be judgmental, but I admit to this as myself, so I do it too. It's kind of sick, but we sort of enjoy sometimes holding on to hurt and anger, where we're getting something out of it. Why do we do that?
When we're angry or hurt, it's kind of an evolutionary strength to some degree, because if we're hurt or angry, we become more alert to making sure we don't become hurt or angry in the future.
Hmm.
So we start wearing glasses that are overly focused on being hurt or angry. That keeps things from making us feeling vulnerable.
Aha. Uh-huh. So holding
on to anger is an attempt to do that.
So it's like a defense mechanism, actually. It helps us.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Because when we're angry again, I don't have to admit to you my feeling ignored or discounted or anxious.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Makes a lot of sense. By the way, in case you guys just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Dr. Bernard Golden. He's been a practicing psychologist for over 40 years, the author of so many books he has written, and we're talking about his latest today. It's called Overcoming Destructive Anger. We're going to tell you how you can get a hold of this book and many of his others at the end of the show to find out more about him as well. And get yourself some help, because, I mean, if a lot of people are telling you that you've got to get your act together and chill out, this book will help you. And also, if you know somebody who you'd really like to help out, you can just send this book to them anonymously. because they'll be angry if you tell them they need it. Anyway, by the way, let's just shoot that out there right now. What is the best way that listeners can find out more about you and get a hold of your book, Dr. Goldman?
It's available on Amazon.com and other bookstores, other book websites as well. And my website is angermanagementeducation.com.
Cool. Angermanagementeducation.com. That's a good one, too. So let's talk a little bit more about anger and, you know, how we hang on to it. And when should we be really concerned about our anger? I mean, people have told us before, we've told other people, it's really getting tough to be around them, or, you know, other right. people say the same about us.
When it goes from 0 to 60 within mm-hmm. seconds, mm. in terms of the intensity, might be described by others as being a hothead.
Mm-hmm.
You might experience mild to intense anger several times a day. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you're quick to become aggressive, we're acting out the anger that way.
Mm-hmm.
Having an underlying hostile attitude.
Yes.
And then also pervasive. Is it just in a relationship, or is it at work, or is it across the board, work, relationship, and in between?
Mm-hmm.
And one area of anger that's not talked about too much is the idea that we can be very angry at ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
You may observe people being angry, but there's also a lot of anger in some of those, as you described, harsh expectations we push on ourselves, and that kind of reflects anger and disappointment that we're not living up to some imagined way of being.
Boy, does that make a lot of sense. Something else that I hear from folks, too, and you probably, of course, have as well, people get angry at themselves because they're not assertive enough. They're not speaking up enough for themselves because they're people pleasers, and they don't want to be judged, or they want people to like them. So they're unwilling to get angry at, or, you know, express themselves in, uh-huh. in an assertive, as we say, or stronger manner. They turn a lot of that inward, and then they get really mad at themselves and are very disappointed, and they're ending up being angry anyway. You know.
Right, as I emphasize in the book,
yeah.
that's another problem with anger.
Yeah,
is that if the person is, if you're so uncomfortable with it, even being assertive may be experienced as being angry.
Mm-hmm.
But assertiveness just clarifies what is it I'm feeling about your particular behavior,
yeah.
a very specific behavior, and inviting some discussion about that.
Yeah,
but it takes time. Also, a lot of people don't know the actual wording to help them be assertive, to
yeah.
distinguish between assertive and aggressive.
Mm-hmm. They so don't.
Something we may think we should know it, but we don't.
Right.
Most of us aren't brought up being told and how to be assertive.
Right. So what is, so just for listeners out there, what would you say would be the difference between being more assertive as opposed to being more aggressive? I guess.
So an example might be a woman is angry because her boyfriend comes home late, 45 mm-hmm. minutes late from the expected time. Now, on one hand, if she feels completely secure within herself, she'll just feel disappointed.
Yes.
Maybe a little angry, and she can focus on the anger, or she could say, you know, I'm disappointed. I was expecting you earlier. I was looking forward to spending time with you, sharing the feelings behind the anger.
Yeah.
If she's someone who has hot buttons about trust, dependability, or insecure issues, she might be much more angry. But the same feelings may be of disappointment, but it also may be a little mini betrayal or a mm-hmm. sense of abandonment that gets triggered.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she could talk about in an assertive way. When you did this, I felt this.
Uh-huh.
I'd like you to do this next time. This way, is that something you could agree to do?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So the last
yeah.
comment is an invitation of
right.
and identifying what is it I need, what's going to help me feel better.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And it's not name-calling. You're a jerk. You're this.
Right.
You do this.
Right.
Sort of compounds.
And once you say those things, now the other person is feeling threatened as well,
yeah.
and they're going to be reactive.
Exactly. They sure are. I was going to ask you a question about inheritance and inheriting anger, and you're a specialist on this as well. So we have a great question here coming from Justin. It's a great question. It's sort of what I was going to ask it, but he said, "Hey, Doc, thanks for the great book. I'm 32 years old, and all I can remember while growing up is hearing my mom and dad scream at each other. My sister and I every night would go hide under her bunk bed because we'd wait for mom and dad to stop screaming after several hours. I think my dad had bipolar disorder, but he left the family when I was finally an adult and gave us all some peace." How can I tell if I have anger issues or if some of my other siblings have anger issues that are going to be destructive? That's interesting.
Well, I was emphasizing fact those signs of anger problems, and certainly coming from that kind of a background, I use the word prairie dog syndrome in my book.
Yeah,
it's not a term you'll ever see in psychology books.
other than
mine, perhaps. But it's that vulnerability to high intense emotion that we may experience as a child, being around that kind of intense anger. Having to hide makes one extremely, again, vulnerable to feel threatened and vulnerable to want to retreat. And there's always an overlap, I should say, with certain emotional mental disorders. Makes one more of a volatile, more reactive to that emotional brain. And having a challenge like that can really make someone prone to anger.
It really does, you know. And Justin, we can help you out also by, you know, explaining the possibly, you said your father may have had bipolar disorder, and you know, in the manic phase sometimes of that disorder, one of the characteristics is extreme anger. And folks really can't control themselves, can they, Doctor? I mean, they don't sort of know in that chemical imbalance. If they're not on meds, they don't know how to deal with it.
During those moments, it's hard to engage the rational brain, and that's the entire goal of anger management, is to pause, hit the pause button, and to engage the rational brain to help override the more primitive brain's tendency to lash out.
Yeah.
And at that time, it's more going by emotion. Mm-hmm. And they do have difficulties modulating, regulating, calming themselves.
Mm-hmm. They really do. And, you know, medications these days are wonderful. A lot of times they didn't. They used tranquilizers in the last generation. Many times, the older generation they did. They just kind of chilled out and took a lot of Seconal or whatever. You know,
right. There's a whole range of medications they
right.
can use.
That's right,
and are effective.
Right now they have. You're right. They do have many wonderful medications that can help, you know, cause some of those chemical imbalances and stuff. But
Emphasize that someone with bipolar disorder, when they're dealing with anger, they need the treatment for the bipolar disorder either at the same time they're learning new anger management skills or before, so that they are able to absorb and practice these skills that can help us, in a sense, retrain our brain to develop more constructive ways of managing anger.
Yeah, exactly. And try to be patient on themselves as well, because many times what I see is, you know, people who have that destructive anger, whether it's chemically induced or not, lose a lot of relationships. They just don't understand, you know, why they don't have people around them. People don't want to be around them anymore. It's too harmful. It's too scary. So, and I'm talking about emotional anger as well, not necessarily or only physical anger. You know, it can be very difficult for a lot of people. So we talked about how anger is related to anxiety and depression, and there's a lot of shame going on in it as well, you know, those messages. And so it's really difficult sometimes to really control many, you know, responses and old stuff. And like you said, Dr. Golden, we have to get in touch with our buttons, our hot buttons. We have to get in touch with, why do we get so angry? What are the themes? So how would you suggest that people sort of, first of all, get in touch with what they need to understand about themselves?
In my book, I offer many tools and exercises so they can practice on a daily basis mm-hmm. to manage and understand their anger. So relaxation exercises, our anger begins in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're practicing becoming more in touch with our bodies, body scan exercises, there are downloads on my website as well as on the internet in general, becoming more sensitive to body sensations so we know what it feels like to be relaxed. The more we're able to do this in the moment of anger,
yeah,
and we catch ourselves that way. Doing a daily body check-in just to help get more aware of our body. What am I feeling tension in any area? Am I feeling relaxed?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, emotions. We have a lot of difficulty identifying specific emotions or feelings, and I offer in my book a feelings list so we can become more in touch with acknowledging, recognizing feelings. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, I offer an anger log.
Mm.
And this is something people fill out after they've been angry, but also after they've sufficiently calmed down to fill it out.
Right, exactly. No, that's good.
Mm-hmm. And using the log, they can then backtrack. Okay, what are the feelings I was experiencing before my anger? What kind of expectations did I have? And again, what are the key desires that I felt were threatened? So they see patterns to their behavior. They recognize vulnerabilities. It helps them understand the event that they're reviewing, but it also makes them more aware and mindful to the next time to become focused on what's going on internally.
Boy, and those are such good tips and ideas to help people out. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my special guest today is Dr. Bernard Golden. He's been a practicing psychologist for over 40 years. He is an expert in so many psychological, psychiatric subjects, including anger, and we're talking about his latest book today. It's called Overcoming Destructive Anger, Strategies That Work. Now, these are proven strategies, and like Dr. Goldman just said, he was talking about, you know, kind of keeping a journal, just sort of a log about your anger, and then being more mindful of you know, how often and where it came from, and some of the reasons why you believe that people have harmed you, and you know, it really is working through a lot of, you know, your own stuff, and this book can help you do that. You know, one of the things that I see in my practice is also the pain. There's pain, of course. People say, well, the root of anger is pain. So is that true? And how can we deal with overwhelming pain that we have?
I see anger as really being an outcome of our own pain.
Mm.
And in a way, I say that anger is an outgrowth of an attempt at our own self-compassion.
Yeah.
I'm in pain, but I'm so uncomfortable, I'm not even looking at it, recognizing it. But if I target someone with my anger, it's a distraction and reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's handled constructively, then we're being compassionate with ourselves and with someone else. When it's handled without being in a more reactive way, I say that self-compassion going awry.
Mm.
But it is very much an outgrowth of our internal pain if we take the time to hit the pause button and recognize what that's about.
Yes. Can you talk a little bit about what anger does to our bodies physiologically? I mean, I've heard people say literally, your anger is going to kill you, you know?
Uh-huh. So, dating back into the 70s, these cardiac specialists mm-hmm. did studies, and they found that, yes, people who have an ongoing hostility have an ongoing increased level of cortisol, that hormone related to fight and flight.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're in a constant or frequent state of fight and flight, you're wearing down your body, literally.
Mm-hmm.
High cortisol, adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are factors related to cardiac problems, hypertension, exacerbates or can contribute to diabetes, a number of illnesses like that.
So when somebody says, you know, you can have a heart attack, don't get so angry, that's true in a way.
That's true.
Wow.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the heart just says, I can't take this anymore, and cortisol spewing out in your body. Nothing is going on to help protect you or soothe you, and literally you can have a heart attack. Wow.
Right.
That's scary.
Especially
stuff.
If it's an ongoing hostility.
Yes, exactly. So we're all critical. You know, turn on the television, you know, go online, look at all your feeds that you're looking at, social media on your phone. I mean, there is so much criticism going on, especially with the political, you know, scene right now, what's going on in politics and what is going to be the best for the country. And we're all just embroiled in this crazy, you know, anger towards each side or the middle ground or whatever it is. How can we tone down our critical nature? We're all critical of others and things we don't like, but how can we do that? And how can we, as you talk about in your book, cultivate forgiveness? I really like that.
When we are critical of ourselves or others, the challenge is to be mindful that we're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talk about mindfulness and mindfulness meditation in my book, it's a way of just observing our thoughts, observing our feelings. And through those skills, we can take that time to observe them.
Mm.
I practice what I preach, and so over the years, when I find myself with a critical thought,
right.
I say to myself, Bernie, is that necessary? In a very, a compassionate way. That's the mindfulness, I think, that takes time to practice, to recognize if I'm being critical toward others or myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the major skills, to take that time to step back and realize that we are being critical.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, in a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week cycle, we see so much of that.
Yes.
That it becomes acceptable almost. And
right.
I actually tell people, limit your intake from, I'm sorry, but TV news.
Yeah, no, exactly.
tell them to relax with something else. You'll get all the news you need, and, you know.
Right.
And sometimes to look at it on the internet rather than to see it on TV.
Yes,
so they
exactly.
can read it. They can have more control and choice.
Boy, does that make a lot of sense.
And sometimes I encourage them, you know, don't go looking at the comments.
Exactly.
Because, like you say, there are so many critical comments. I mean, clearly there are some very supportive and compassionate responses, but a lot of people, like you say, a lot of people are feeling threatened.
Yes, they should.
And I think that's what contributes to that kind of anger. Threatened in different ways, threatened in ways that they really not actually threatened, but they feel threatened, and that's the key contributor to anger.
Well, that's right. That's some great information. And guys, if you would like to email us or if you'd like to call, you can do so. We're here in Los Angeles, on LA Talk Radio. It's a 323 number, 203-0815. And, of course, my email address hooked right up here to the station is straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. We have several emails coming in about anger. I think it's one of the most common things that comes up in my practice, and I'm sure yours too, Dr. Golden, right? Hear about it.
Yes, and I see a lot of people over the years where there hasn't been the information about very specific skills that people can practice. And as we've learned with the idea of the neuroplasticity, that we can rewire the way our brain works, the more we practice any particular thought or behavior.
Right.
But yes, anger is a very prevalent concern and
yes.
People talk about it.
It sure is. We have a great email that came in here from Gabrielle. Looks like Gabrielle. And shall we give it a shot here, Dr. Golden? It's a good one.
Okay.
She said, I've been with my boyfriend now for about 2 years, and we're talking about marriage. He came from a home where his parents were both angry. His father used to scream at him and tell him he was worthless. He's always pretty nice to me, but has a hot temper. He's lost a lot of friends because he's very defensive. How can I help calm him down when he gets furious? That's a great question.
There are some strategies to help diffuse the other person's anger, and a great deal of it depends on being able to control our own anger.
Hmm.
And so if I turn inward and let's say he's angry and I've learned skills to become calm, only then can I think rationally in terms of reacting to him. Emotions are contagious, and so if he's angry, either I'll retreat completely or become angry myself. But mm-hmm, if I can mm-hmm. remain calm, then I could say in a low voice and speak slowly, okay, I can tell you're angry.
Yeah.
Maybe you're hurt, maybe you're feeling ignored, maybe you're feeling overwhelmed. Can we talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
And by lowering your voice and speaking slowly, the goal would be to slow the person down, validate that you know they're angry, you can tell they're angry,
yeah.
and then invite them to talk about that pain behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I also suggest that in that kind of situation, make sure you're in the same room and not yelling across rooms.
Oh, yeah.
It's easier to be yelling at somebody or something when you're not looking in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having this kind of discussion, I say pick the most comfortable couch or chair in your living room, because physically you want to help him be a little more relaxed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so those would be some general guidelines. I also have in my book an agreement that couples can make about mm-hmm. how to handle anger.
Yes.
And one, for example, might be they identify a word that they can agree to.
Mm-hmm.
And any time one person is feeling agitated or feeling like this is going nowhere constructive, to say the word.
Yes.
And that means if they have agreed ahead of time, we're going to put this conversation on a shelf, we'll come back to it, and we have to come back to it.
Right.
But not right now.
No, that's a really great idea, because that's a problem that I see a lot, is that, you know, it just spirals into this, you know, it's almost like a contest. Someone wants to shout over someone else, well, you did this, well, you did that. But, you know, they go back into the past, and then they just blow it all out. They let their anger out at each other. And it, again, I think it's addictive almost. It's sort of like gets into this pattern where it's almost like feeding that endorphin thing. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It's like
it's also addictive because yeah. like for this fellow you're describing,
yeah.
he may feel familiar with it. It may feel like this mm-hmm. is what we did at home.
Yeah.
Even though
right.
he doesn't want to do it, but that's what felt familiar.
Right. And you know, you learn, you have genetics, and you learn from your environment how to the parents behaved, and you learn that that's how you get heard and how to express yourself, and you never kind of learn how to just kind of calm down. So those are some great ideas, and thank you so much, Gabrielle, for emailing us. And that's a great question. Because, you know, it is hard to diffuse someone who's off. You know, you've gone off. And I love that idea about having a word. And also, just be able to, like you said, say, I'm not willing to go there. I don't want to go into this spiral of craziness. So I see you're angry. I hear you. What I need to do is walk away right now. So I'm going to let the dust settle. I'm going to go out, take a walk around the block, or, you know, whatever. I just need you to calm down right. a little bit so we can talk calmly about this, because I'm not going to play this game. I don't want to play anymore.
Right. And depending on the couple as well, I often suggest for some people, if they have a real sense of trust issues, go in the other room rather than leaving the house.
Right.
Because now you're out of the house, now it hits their trust issue. It,
yeah.
It could exacerbate their anger as well as give them messages that, see, every time you get angry, I'm going to leave. But, right.
No, that's right. The trust thing, it's a biggie, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's like, that's right. But we have to teach folks who get outraged and you know, act out with their anger, that we're just not going to play anymore. We don't want to play the game. We're not willing to do that. We're trying to get healthy here. We want to talk about it. So let's find ways to do that. Let's find ways to calm down. So you have wonderful steps for keeping anger healthy. So actually, you identify in your book 19 steps, which are amazing. Guys, you have to read this book, Overcoming Destructive Anger, Bernard Golden, PhD. It's called Strategies That Work. Can you consider just sharing maybe the top five strategies or the steps for keeping anger healthier for folks?
Sure. Again, the overriding strategy is to develop any strategy where you can stop.
Yeah.
And use anger as a signal to turn your attention inward, to focus that on your feelings or your thoughts and your bodily sensations. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier the relaxation exercises, practicing those daily, because so many of us aren't in touch with our bodies. The more we learn to relax, now when we're in the midst of escalating, we can evoke that kind of calmness.
Yeah.
Doing that body check-in. Mm-hmm. What am I feeling right now? A few times a day. What am I feeling in my body? What are my emotions?
Mm-hmm.
Practice skills in compassion and self-compassion. Am I being judgmental of myself?
Yeah.
Overly judgmental? Am I being overly perfectionistic? Am I having thinking that is all or none, all or nothing thinking? Or for example, if he did that, then he doesn't love me.
Yeah.
I have to be aware of that kind of thinking, because that makes me vulnerable to anger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's all about hitting that pause button. So again, the rational brain can override the more emotional part of us. And it includes learning strategies to let go of anger, which may include forgiving. It may include writing a letter to someone that you never share with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It may include writing a letter that serves as a reference to talk about what's really going on, the pain behind your anger.
Boy, is that true. And, you know, so many people, though, they're like, I am justified. I have a right to be angry. It's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Work on it. Work on, of course, you may have a right to be angry. We all have anger. We all have hurt, pain. Which leads me to the next question. We're all our own worst enemies, right? So, I mean, we turn it in on ourselves, and that makes us even angrier. But like you said earlier, we're angry at ourselves. How can we tone down our own critical nature, and how can we sort of forgive ourselves for you know, hurting other people or hanging on? Yeah.
I was emphasizing that in my book, Mindfulness. Mindfulness meditation helps us to observe that critical voice. And then to evoke a compassionate voice involves being attentive to be kind to ourselves.
Right.
To be non-judgmental, to recognize that we're human, that we're part of humanity, we make mistakes.
Right.
To recognize we all have feelings of all kinds rather than having anger that I'm angry or angry that I'm anxious. Where we have this overlay that makes it so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time to cultivate self-compassion. Mm. We are our worst enemies, and most people are much more compassionate with other people.
Yeah.
And so it takes practice to stop and say to myself, how would I want my best friend to respond to what I just did or what I thought?
Mm.
And we get a very different voice. Some of the studies about compassion are developing compassion skills that I mentioned in my book.
Yeah.
Very interesting in that for some people, they practice compassion skills, which involves some meditation statements. I am. May I be safe?
Right.
May I have good health? Also practicing giving compassion to someone else to evoke what is described as one's compassionate self.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes practice. But the people who have had so high criticisms of themselves are very uncomfortable with that compassion. And so they may need to work out some earlier issues about not getting enough, the hurt and anger that they had that keeps them from being more compassionate with themselves without looking at compassion as weakness.
Boy, is that true. That is so true. Choosing compassion is such a biggie. And something I know you hear about a lot, too, is people who complain about growing up in their environment or their parents or their relatives or whoever hurt them or have really nasty habits and really imposed a lot of, you know, the parents who imposed a lot of their own anger and, you know, their own lack of self-worth onto their children. But you write in your book that we can develop empathy for others and understand their anger and not take it so personally and see that it's sort of like they're projecting that onto us by visualizing their childhood and considering their backstory, right? Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. We observe behavior, and very quickly we may demonize someone for their behavior.
Yeah.
But everyone has a backstory.
Yeah.
Everyone has a backstory of interactions, their hurt, their pain, that contributed to whatever their behavior is. And when you look at the backstory, how someone behaves in their life begins to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that individual backstory.
Right.
You may not like the behavior, and you may be repulsed by their behavior, or you may have a whole range of reactions, but it's taking time to recognize that they have a backstory, and that's where you can develop empathy to make up one if you're not sure of the details, or based on what you do have. And it's understanding that backstory helps give empathy and then compassion.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, you also talk about... you know, feeling the pain. A pain is sometimes anger. You know, feel it, get through it, allow it, cry, get it out, understand it. And that helps us let it go? Does that help manage our anger sometimes when we can feel the pain that's associated with how we have been hurt and why we're lashing out?
Very much so. One of the compassion exercises involves sitting still, maybe doing some quiet breathing for a moment,
right,
and then recognizing where that pain is. If I'm feeling angry, and what's the hurt, and just sit for a while and focus on where you might feel it in your body.
Right.
And some people will, and I suggest they put their hand on it if they feel it in a certain area. And so I see a lot of people where they'll put it on their abdomen or on their chest or right by their heart.
Right.
And I see people put it on the back of their neck as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, it helps them become aware that I'm experiencing this within me, but it's not all of me.
Mm-hmm.
So they can observe it, they can recognize there's this whole body I have that's around this pain, and they become able to observe it and also see that they are experiencing it, but also observing it.
Yes.
And that gives some ability to sit with it, rather than be overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
The word I often use is they're being a witness to their own pain.
Mm.
And that's validating, just to sit and, yes, this is painful. This is what discomfort pain feels like.
Yes.
This is a feeling. Like a weather front, it comes and it goes. But
right.
This is what I'm feeling now.
That's great. That's great, Dr. Golden. What do you think about people who just have explosive anger and they say things like, oh, I just feel so much better to get it out. It's better to get it out. I've heard this a lot from people. And it's like everyone else is sort of like the walking wounded around them. And they're like, oh, my God. But it feels so much better. I feel better. what about everybody else? I mean, is that true? Is it really better to get it out?
Years ago, there were therapists who would suggest just let it all out and forget about what people think.
Right, right.
And it might help them. It's a temporary fix.
Right.
Temporarily distracts them. Again, it doesn't allow them to look beyond the pain.
Right.
And ultimately, it does chase people away. Eventually, people will say, okay, I'm not enjoying this spending time around you.
Yeah.
So they may feel better, but again, it's temporary.
And it does kind of train us because, I mean, they learned with the Bobo dolls a long time ago, right, with the kids.
Right.
You know, the kids that got to beat those dolls that would, you know, those blow-up dolls. If you don't know what those are, guys, they'd stand up again and you could sock them and they'd lay down and they had weights in them, but then they'd pop up again. And I think the studies were that the people who were allowed to, you know, beat up the Bobo dolls or, you know, express their anger showed more anger because it was okay to do that. It sort of trained the brain to be more physically and emotionally angry. Is that right?
They were rehearsing.
Yeah. There you go.
That's what the studies showed later on.
Right.
Especially when they were asked to put the face of someone they're angry on the Bobo doll.
Right, exactly.
They were literally rehearsing, training their nerves in their body and their musculature to act out.
That's so true. It really is. If you were to say something to someone before we part today, quickly, as to, you know, how to just diffuse your explosive anger if you're driving or someone at work really bothers you or someone, you know, in your life is hurtful to you, what would you say to them to help them right now with their anger?
Aside from practicing all the skills I've been mentioning, stop, do some deep breathing, inhaling, and exhaling. Spend more time exhaling than inhaling.
Oh, yeah.
identify, turn your attention inward. What are you experiencing? That's the feelings behind it. Remind yourself that they have a backstory that's contributing. Be aware of your own personalizing. Someone cuts you off. One of my clients said, you know, I used to be so angry when people cut me off until I had to take my 15-year-old to an emergency room. And from now on, I've told myself, when they cut me off, maybe that person has an emergency. I'm not even going to be judging that.
Wow. That's so heavy. Yes.
To be aware of our judgments that make us vulnerable.
Boy, you've got that right. Well, it's just about that time, but Dr. Bernard Golden's book is Overcoming Destructive Anger, Strategies That Work. It is the best anger book I've read so far, guys. Please get a hold of it. And again, Dr. Golden, what is the best way to find your book besides going on Amazon?
other web bookstores, as well as it should be in bookstores. The few that are remaining.
And your website is great, too. So,
And my website is angermanagementeducation.com.
There you go. Thanks for being there for everybody. You're a superstar, and I love what you have to contribute here.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take good care, and we'll keep up. Looking forward to your next book as well.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Take good care now. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, guys, if you want to pick up the book, you can come back and check out, of course, Archives. Show will be up on the air right after we get off the air, and I'll have the information on how you can get a hold of this book. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first, and you'll be great for others. That's the way it works in the world. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll talk to you next week. We're talking about healthy sexual relationships. All right, bye-bye now. It's Dr. Michelle.
I used to chill and relax, and maybe smoke a fast stack while we laugh about the past, but that's too vast to express how much I love you and all the selfish things you put me through. Well, who am I to judge? I made some stupid choices too. Regardless, I'm just living it up. I'm blind to the negativity. Floating in the golden lotus, that's where I'll be. This experience is such a blessing. Motherfucker, stop asking questions. Your soul knows that this defeats the purpose. Close your eyes and let me be your wordsmith. Listen up, y'all, I miss those days. Chilling on the moon with the guitar, spitting phrase. But now, I'm in another days, unconditionally missing y'all. And all the silly games like, will we used to play and see how fast we can smoke out of roar and burn our tree. But really, it was all about the good times. Doesn't matter if we had sacks and dimes, we got each other until the end of this rhyme. At least that's how it seemed, that everything was fine. Get drunk and blaze, but I guess that was just another phase, like selling X or getting late. But now I have to work to get paid. Not that money really matters in this life, I mean, right? Not that money really matters in this life.